Are these new headphones?
Yeah, well, listen, this is the Allstate Skyline Studio, and this is the Brian Noonan Show podcast with Cody Goff. Jeff Carlin is here, Roe Khan's producer, and it is at the breweries. Our friends John Carruthers from Revolution Brewery and Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island Brewery are here. Boys, it is always good to see you, because one, you bring beer, and two, you bring knowledge.
Knowledge is power, and power makes beer, right?
That's right. And rain makes wheat. Wheat makes beer. I don't know. So today was a big beer day in Chicago. It was raining all day. How are you, boys?
Fantastic.
Now, I don't want to blow anything, but last time you were here, you said, "Don't worry, our next at the breweries, we're going to blow your mind." So, at some point, are you going to blow our minds?
Yeah,
I hope so.
I'm going to just blow it right out. I just hope that you said goodbye to the old Brian before we came in today.
The old Brian, really, I left him a long time ago.
He was overrated.
He was very high maintenance. He was not a fun guy to be around. So, any big beer news? I know you say beer news changed. Beer news is happening all the time. But anything big we need to know as we go into the fall season?
Chicago just kicked some butt at GABF, the Great American Beer Festival.
Really?
In Colorado. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, the number one beer competition for American brewers. And yeah, Chicago cleaned up. Big breweries, small breweries, everybody in between.
Yeah. Hey, you want to give special shout outs to?
Revolution.
Let's start with your breweries. Did you guys win
Revolution won something? A bronze?
Barrel age strong beer category. Ooh. For Straight Jacket, our barley wine.
Oh, very nice.
Which a nice beer, Brian.
Has it come out yet?
It's coming out in January, but next week you get the 2-year version of it at our tap room and at the release party.
Really?
Yeah, it's a 2- and 3-year blend in cans. It only comes out every couple years, so this is the medal winning beer, but like more.
This one's extra.
It's extra more.
It goes to 11.
11. So what we hear this term all the time. We won't spend a lot of time on it because you have a different style we're going to talk about today. But what's a barley wine for people who aren't sure?
Barley wine is an old sort of English style. It almost went extinct, but it is big, strong, just packed with booze and hops. It's got a lot of hops to balance this huge malt bill that creates this big ABV. And, you know, you get some like Great Divides that are pretty, you know, not harsh, but they're very strong on the palate with the hops. You put them in a barrel, you know, like the one Jesse's company puts out every couple years.
I've heard Goose Island does
years.
Some barrel stuff.
They're not doing it this year, but, like, you know, you get the sweet, very, like, dark fruit profile.
Okay.
It's really a cool style of beer that can be made to please a lot of tastes.
Very nice.
The English style, the American style is very hoppy because, like what John was saying, the malt bill is so big that you need hops to balance that out. But I think Americans, we always do everything too, like, a very big extreme. And I think American, I know American barley wines are too hoppy for me. I just can't do them. But English style, like what Revolution does and what Goose Island do, those are my favorite. They'll knock you on your ass, though. So,
so now,
careful.
I was going to say the ABV, the alcohol by volume, of those are very high.
Oh, they're big boys, yeah.
Yeah.
And so will this be one of those events, John, at Revolution, where people are lining up to get these cans of this 2- and 3-year-old blend of barley wine?
Those barley wine fans are something, man. You know, they're like Rush fans. It's like, I've got my favorite thing, and I am going advocate for it to my dying breath. They're the best.
Very nice. So bronze medal. Did Goose win anything?
We weren't at JBF, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Were you outlawed? Were you banned? Some performance-enhancing scandal? What happened?
To keep out of the scandal. We're not considered craft by the Brewery Association's guidelines.
Boy.
So we were just kind of we see the writing on the wall. You know, we're okay not participating in GABF.
Hey, but enough of us. Some really great, underappreciated Chicago breweries finally got their time on the national stage.
Who won?
Alarmist Brewing from the far north side.
Very nice.
Argus Brewing from Aris Brewery and Cider House.
So big shout out to those guys in Alarmist. They're personal friends of ours. Alarmist, they've been doing it for a few years now, and it's great that they got gold. They won gold for NEPA?
New England style IPA. It's something we're going to be pouring for you in a little bit. We were segueing because we are radio and podcasting professionals.
You guys know how to do this. You've done this before.
Once or twice.
Yeah. So at New England IPA.
It literally was once or twice, yeah.
They won gold. Congratulations to Alarmist.
Mm-hmm.
Who else won?
Aris. They're less than a year old.
Yeah, I think of them more as a cider place.
They make some fine beers, too, they're at it.
Yeah. Okay.
Good food, good beer, great cider,
Very nice.
Smiley Brothers out of Evanston won a silver for I'm pointing at Jesse.
Something delicious.
I can look it up. I brought the. I didn't memorize.
That's
all
right.
So Smiley Brothers, Argus.
Argus, yeah, Argus from the South Side. They've been brewing for a while, but they're getting some recognition now.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, congratulations to all the winners. It's a
there's some we're forgetting.
That's
a big feather
in your brewery cap, right? To win something at
Especially at GABF. I mean, people love to hang their medals up. You know, every brewery from the tiny ones to the big boys. But like to hang up a GABF medal is special for any brewer or anyone who's even connected to beer like me and Jesse.
Yeah, well, and it's especially exciting for like Alarmist because that category that had the most entries of any category.
It was the brand new category.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think IPA, there was like 339 entries.
Oh, something like that. Yeah. There were more New England IPAs this year than barrel-aged beers. Yeah.
And again, what sets a New England IPA? Can you explain what we pour? Let's pour them. Yeah. So what style are we looking at today? Because for those who are listening for the first time at the breweries, every time the boys are in, they bring a certain style of beer, and they have one that is the baseline beer, and then we compare some others of that same style. So what are we looking at today?
So today we're going to do hazy IPAs.
Okay.
We've got beer from our friends at Mars, and I actually was in Minnesota last week, and there was a brewery that they're called Drecker. They're out of Fargo, North Dakota.
We're going like Midwest, super regional. Yeah. This is how we take over.
That's it.
So I was going to different accounts, and the beer nerds were out hanging around like vultures, just waiting to scoop down some carcass, and the carcass being this Drecker beer. So I asked, I was
sure they
asking
appreciate
the owners,
you saying that.
Yeah.
we're giving them some love. Come on.
Yeah, really.
In a Jesse way. But the beer nerds were hanging out, and I kept on asking people what they were waiting for, and they were kind of weird and hushed about it. And then somebody goes,
we're not telling this guy, he's not from here.
Yeah. That's how it was. So it was like, oh, yeah, Drecker's dropping their beer today. So the guy from Drecker is coming in, talking to the shop owner, and then the guys are just waiting. He goes out, and he finally comes out, puts on the floor, and these guys are just grabbing four packs. It was
it was
goofy.
Jesse, I'm gonna be so mad if they don't have a dark beer named Drecker Noir.
Jesse High School.
Very
what?
Nice. All right. So these are hazy IPAs. What makes them hazy?
Oh, you'll see. I mean, these things look like juice, like papaya juice, mango juice, orange juice. Let's see what this is from Drecker.
Let's start with Mars.
Let's start with Mars. These are our very good friends from the South Side, longtime Chicagoans. Maria's Packaged Goods, Liquors.
Well, the lineage goes back to that.
Yeah.
Jesse put his nose. Cody, did you see that? He put his nose right up in the air like a snob. Jeff, were you privy to that, Jeff?
I saw a pinky, too.
Wow, yeah, there was a very weird. I've never seen him really talk down to John before this, but that was.
I guess you don't see too many of our conversations then.
Well, no, just here. Thank you.
I just call it Wednesday.
I really want to find. I
see a watermelon on the can. Is there a watermelon involved in this?
So this is the cool thing that we're going to get into. But like the fruit flavors driving these are all due to the creativity of the people who breed and grow hops.
Okay.
Now some of these styles are fruited,
right?
But this one is entirely based on the hop profile, the malt, and how the brewers manage to evoke those like sweet, fruity, like tropical blast of flavors without having to put a bunch of fruit in.
Ah, very nice. Gather around, boys. You're going to have some, Cody?
Yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
You can talk.
I know that. Listen.
All the time.
There's a lot of people in here.
These are very hazy.
They're the experts on
beer.
Opaque. I'm going to let them do the beer talking.
Yeah.
And,
one of my favorite things to do is try to read something through it, and if I can't, then I know it's very New England.
Yeah, this looks... why New England?
They were just the first people to put out and really push the beers of this particular flavor profile. So West Coast IPA is the dominant style in like, the 80s, 90s, early 2000s. Very very hop forward, very crisp, very bitter. This is almost like the opposite. You'll see old-timey West Coast drinking guys be like, oh, you boys and your juice. Ah, this isn't real beer.
And now they're adding a lot of the dry hopping, so you're getting a lot of really nice hoppy notes on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
They're not adding bitterness to the beer. They're just adding, the hop aroma. And these also, different from the West Coast, they're dank and juicier.
Dank. Yes, that's a good adjective. I like that.
When I first heard that, I'm like, oh, man.
But yeah, so what you're seeing in here is, hop particulates, some yeast, some proteins, and that's why you can't read the paper through it. I don't know why you do that in the first place.
I was going to say, how often do you read? You read the paper.
Our listeners are missing a hilarious visual of everyone in the studio holding it up to the light, kind of looking
like we're diamond experts with our little bottom. Yes, I see.
I also got to ask, as beer guys, I've probably missed this in a previous segment, but is there a way to taste this? It's not like wine where you swirl it and sniff it and all that stuff, right?
You know, so well, you don't do the pull air through your palate thing because beer is carbonated and you just foam it all up. One thing that's kind of cool if you want to do is you hold it in your mouth for a second and let it warm up. A lot of the flavor of any beer is going to present itself after it's not ice cold. And then after you swallow, breathe back out through your nose. And it's called retronasal breathing, but I just call it nose exhaling. It's less.
Oh, we should write that down.
Jargony.
Retronasal breathing, though. It makes you sound
a little
more
fancy. Yeah, so you retronasal breathe it. You do whatever.
Retro's cool.
You nosy breathe. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those flavors resent itself because so much of what you taste is based on your sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
This seems very hoppy to me.
It is hoppy.
Beers are, I mean, I'm not throwing Mars under the bus. Yeah. These beers in general are quite pricey because they use a lot of hops.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's balanced, so there's a lot of sweetness there. It's not like knock you in the back of the teeth bitterness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still got that front of the tongue.
A few years ago, it was a cool thing to add as many IBUs to your beer as you could and like, see what you could take. And
look at you, dogfish.
500 whatever minute.
Yeah.
That's your beer, though, right?
It is. I mean, I love it.
That's your go-to.
But that was, you know, that's the hops sitting in the boil for such a long time and, like, getting every ounce and every hop oil and just... That's where all that bitterness comes from. And what I was saying earlier with this, they're also dry hopping it. So it's an addition at the end, again, to get more of the aroma.
So it goes through the whole process, and then you're adding more hops at the end?
Almost like making a tea.
Yeah, you have to add hops at different points. So the first stuff you add, you're really not going to get any of this dank floral stuff. It's just for the bittering, the antibacterial, everything like that. You add it a little closer to the end. The closer you add it to the end, the more it's presenting as like aroma and flavor and not bitterness. Or, I mean, stuff added at the very end is just very big on the nose. It's not necessarily making your beer any more bitter.
So what was that Mars one called again?
This was called... They have such great artwork on all their cans, too. Look at that.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Dragons hoarding fruit. This is good radio.
Listen, what did pictures?
It's called double splash, double India
splash.
Pale Ale.
All right. Double splash. Usually, when I go out with my wife, if she has a beer, she'll say, "Oh, this is too hoppy for you." But this, I absolutely would not enjoy. Like I like this a lot.
I would not enjoy it.
Yeah, double negative.
There's a lot of negatives. There's a lot of not. Put a positive spin on it. I think I would enjoy this.
Double negative is a good name for a beer too.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm finding my hop tolerance since I've started hanging out with you guys more. My hop tolerance is going up. I used to just if it was really hoppy, I was like, ugh. But the more we're trying, even stuff that I'm looking at and thinking, this may not be up my alley. I'm finding I'm more tolerant of hoppiness.
Yeah, and you know these beers do try to bring the fun stuff about hops to people who thought they would always hate it. My wife does not like pale ales at all, but she really likes the pale ales that Maplewood puts out because it's very much this kind of profile.
Maplewood just won an award for Charlottesville.
Maplewood won a bronze for Charlottesville. How can we forget?
Very nice.
And that was a non-hazy pale ale of theirs.
Yeah.
Delicious, easy to find. Pick it up.
Yeah, it's a good beer. And I like their tap room, too. Visit their tap room.
Where's they do a mean burger.
Do they really?
It's not Logan Square. It's just the new hip neighborhood.
Logan Square-ish.
Ish.
Adjacent? Logan Square adjacent?
There you go.
All right. That's how their realtors will say.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's almost Logan Square. Not really. It's
the nice part of Logan Square.
Yeah, the part that's
Logan
already developed.
Square North.
So as a casual beer drinker who doesn't necessarily know what all the different awards are, like if there's medals hanging, I don't know how good the medals are. What's a good way for a casual beer observer to, like a good resource to know, there was this big thing that happened every year. Like what should people be paying attention to or going to?
I mean, realistically, with medals, there's some categories that some people just kind of, it's such an obscure category where like 10 people will submit a beer in that category and three of them are going to win.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty good odds. But
yeah. It's like going to the Olympics for the three-legged race.
Yeah, that's my next big challenge.
Wow, good for you.
But that, like,
keep aiming high, Jesse. That's what we like about
it. I want to go to Mexico and like do some kind of ice skating something. I don't think they have ice skating, so I mean, I'll make it in the Olympics somehow, right?
You could be the man.
There you go. See?
Winter Olympics. I think you'd look good in the glittery unitard.
I think so, too. I told you, John.
You've been working out.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, generally, it's good to approach it locally, too. Like, we've got Fobab in town. If you're looking for barrel-aged beer, that's a local barrel-aged beer festival featuring a lot of good Chicago brewers. Those medals are usually on point with, like, you know, really good people making really great beer. GABF is just, like, a little hard to keep track of, to your point, because there are so many entries and so many medals, and it happens every single year in so many categories.
And what does GABF stand for?
Great American Beer Festival.
It's good, though. Like, the Brewers Association, if you go to their website, that's a really good resource. And it, what I like doing is just kind of going into their website and looking at winners from years past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you obviously start off local. If you're going to a city, do, like, GABF winners in, I don't know, wherever, Topeka. You know, like, how many breweries from Topeka have won awards?
Probably Who more knows? Than we would imagine.
Yeah.
Because you say Topeka, I'm thinking none.
Yeah.
Unless you're just doing, you know, milk beer.
Someone's going to listen to this and be like, you idiot. 2004.
Yeah, we won the gold for whatever it is that we make, some sort of wheat beer, I'm guessing, in Kansas.
So but the funny thing is, too, though, there's a lot of breweries. It's also, like, it's neat seeing these old list of winners, because a lot of those breweries don't exist anymore, too.
Oh, man.
You know, and then we were talking, it was John and the other John Scholl, the other part of our little clan. We were going over texts and talking about old awards, old GABF festivals, and it's like, yeah, these guys won an award in 2002 when there was like 20 entries, you know. Now, like, that category is like exponentially grown, you know, so there's like hundreds of, you know.
Well, it's funny, I mean, that the first time you ever heard that term GABF was back when Sam Adams first came out, you know. That was when it started coming into the common parlance of
lexicon.
Thank you, Jeff. And now, so, well, we could do another show where we talk about awards and stuff. Right now, we've got another one of these hazy dank. This one looks even, is danker a word? More dank?
The dankest of the dank.
Pineapple juice.
It does really look like pineapple juice.
But I don't trust the people in the Dakotas to know what a pineapple looks like.
It's funny you say pineapple, because after the first sip, it started off without as much hoppiness. But then it came on the back end, and I do get that same pineapple. I get that pineapple feel, you know, like if you're drinking unsweetened pineapple juice.
And it's also the power of persuasion, too, that these hops, that's the Drecker.
The Drecker.
Freaky Parade.
I love the names, and I love the artwork is phenomenal.
I know. This is the art class category here. Like, Mars looking good, Dakota Boys looking good.
Drecker.
Yeah.
So we do a beer that I brought for you guys, the Paper Umbrella, and the hop in that gives off these really nice coconutty pineapple notes. And when I first had the beer, I was like, did we add, was this, you know, just an R&D beer that we added coconut and pineapple? And no, it was just the hop, which is really cool, because really? So many different hops exhibit so many different aromas, flavors.
And new hops are discovered all the time. Yeah. I mean, they're bred and created, at universities, at farms. We used one last year, this year, in a tropical kind of pale ale. I mean, it's just a classic IPA, but this hop makes it like, I mean, it's just like beach summer in a can. And it's crazy how, you know, these hops contribute so much to the beer, even, you know, above and beyond recipe design.
And some of those, again, they'll never see the light of day. Like that Paper Umbrella, it was, the original hop was hop number, it was like 438. So it didn't even have
Sabro
a name.
Hop.
Just what was it?
Now it's called the Sabro Hop, but it was experimental hop 438. Hop?
Yeah.
Hey, hop buddies.
Nice.
I don't care for this one.
Yeah, I'm with Noonan on this one.
I don't like this one.
This is it tasted like an industrial, like it's very medicinal, almost like a cleaning solution, like that's very astringent.
When it first went in, I was like, oh, it's a little smoother and less hoppy than the first one. And then, boy, it came back on the back end, and I was like, ooh, yeah, I'm not a fan of this.
So this one has...
No offense to Fargo. Listen, I don't know. The guys who were hanging around the liquor store, they wanted it.
They're going to kill me.
So you I don't know. No, no, no.
There's a hit out on me now.
People love it. They should enjoy it. That's the beauty of... There's so many beers... You're not going to like all of them.
Yeah.
And part of that is, I'm looking at they list their malts and everything, and they've got some flaked oats in here, some malted oats, and that creates a smoother, thicker mouthfeel, and that'll hold those hops on your palate for just, you know, like a half a second more.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I mean, beer is just a game of inches, so it might be that you like the hops, you know, in a slightly, you know, in a Mars beer with less body, but you stick it around, and it kind of overstays its welcome.
Yeah. So I personally am not a big IPA guy. For the record, so I actually brought another one of Drecker's.
So this is all a nightmare for you?
A little bit. But
and again, you guys picked the style, so it wasn't like we said, please bring in a lot of dank IPAs.
Brian, that makes me a masochist.
Brian, you're sounding nasal. Are you doing an impression of yourself?
I'm just, you know.
That's one of his personalities.
Now, what is this one? So yeah, I have a lot of puppets here, John.
This is the one that identifies itself as a hazy. So, like, the last one was a hazy. This one thinks it is just doubling down on the hazy. Also, from our good friends at Drecker.
Drecker.
But this one's a pale ale. So, by nature, pale ales are lower in IBUs than IPAs. Mm-hmm.
Less assertive.
Yeah. So, I brought this one on purpose because I knew that I was...
You were going to get worn out?
Yeah. That other IPA, I was kind of worried that it would be what it was. Just very.
This one actually looks a little more big. Like the last one we said looked like pineapple juice. This has a little more grapefruit juice look to it, color-wise. Cody, once again, we're all holding it up to the light.
Yeah, it's a great visual. Every single beer, as soon as everybody gets the cup, one goes up, they all go up. It's like, we're all cheersing, but no one's toasted this entire time.
I was going to say, your neighbors are like, man, those guys are toasting
a lot
of
beer. What's happening over there? Irish funeral?
Yeah, exactly, funeral.
You're making fun of me for, you know, holding it up to the light. No. The train conductor's yelling at me for hiding it in a paper bag. I can't win.
No, listen, you can drink it however you want here. We don't care. I like that you brought the little plastic glasses so we could see the dankness. John Carruthers is here from Revolution Brewing and Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island. Follow them. You can follow John on Twitter, UT Chicago, and Jesse is Jesse ManBQ, Q-U-E, not the letter Q. Those are their Twitter handles. You can go to revbrew.com or gooseisland.com to get the big corporate information, but follow the guys, and I know you're on Instagram as well. I know Jesse ManBQ is, I don't know.
Sam, I have UT Chicago because I've never not been able to get that username across any platform.
Very nice.
We don't send a lot of people to the University of Tennessee from this region.
Listen, all right. Yeah, why would you? Volunteers, you and what, one of the Mannings?
I just look good in orange, man.
Do you? All right. Could have gone to UT Austin.
Ooh. Burnt is a bridge too far.
All right. So you like the bright orange, the safety orange.
Right. Yeah, the creamsicle orange.
All right. Jeff, Cody, did you try this one?
Yeah, I dig this one.
Do you?
More than the last one. I agree with both of you on the second beer. This one's similar to the first one, but different.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, very bittery.
Is the Marzen IPA or is that considered a pale ale, John?
This one's a pale ale. This one, the Mars is a double IPA. It's the
wow.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there you go. The first one we had from Drecker, the Freak Parade, is just an IPA.
Yeah.
And it tastes like a double IPA. Where the Mars, they're not calling it. It is a double IPA, but it's your palate is reading it more closely to the second Drecker, which was just a pale ale.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
what's going on with my palate? What's the deal? What's with the trickery?
It really is.
Everyone's
trickery.
Playing in the same
beer's
sandbox,
trickery.
Just building wildly different castles.
Right, one of these is fake news.
You said something about inches, the differences in inches, or something along those lines, and it really the first three all kind of had the same base almost,
yeah.
Even the one
that I
didn't really care for. You get kind of a similar thing, but then the aftertaste is a little different, or it does hit you. Just it's so nuanced, it's surprising.
Yeah, that's why I'm not a fan of these as much, because there is that aftertaste.
My
mouth feels like.
I think the finish on the Mars is way better. It was much better in my opinion. It wasn't lingering, wasn't lasting. I didn't feel coated.
That's it. Yeah, these. You're right. I feel like the top of my mouth, my tongue is coated after these last two. And again, we love Fargo. The movie. I don't know. I haven't. I did comedy up there a few times.
Macy, right?
So I've been to Fargo.
I like the second the pale ale. The first one, the Freak Parade, honestly felt like I was being choked with hops.
See,
it was a bit much for
me. What's going on?
This is where we differ. I mean, I love the Mars. This is my favorite of the three, but I liked the Freak Parade a little more than Phantom Hand.
You're a sick man.
I know, but this is fun. It's okay to be different.
That's why you guys are here. You're not going to like the same thing.
We yell at each other.
Good pick on the Mars, though. I really like that. I like the fruitiness of that one.
Mars is doing just killer beer.
And where is, you said it's Southside? Where in Southside?
Bridgeport.
Okay.
And the tap room is like something. You can tell that the Mars Collective has sort of an arts and design background. It is one of the best looking tap rooms in Chicago.
Yeah, that wood, the floors, the tables, everything's really neat.
Very nice. So Mars, I'm going to go with the Mars out of these three as well. Mm-hmm. Listen, it's not me being a local lover, but I'll pass on Fargo. I'm going to bring my own beer if I go to Fargo.
Yeah, I don't know what
I'm going to bring something else. I'm going to, you know, maybe I have to, maybe I have to break down, go to a liquor store, fight off the beer geeks up in Fargo, and get myself something else.
Because, they're going to hear this and hate you. So
I'm sure they do. No, I'm sure they do other styles of beer. So I would not, forego if I happen to pass Drecker's Tasting Room, I would go in and see what else is on their bill of fare.
Of course,
knowing that these two are not my favorites.
All the ones I saw were all pale ales and IPAs, and I took the two that, well, the one that felt the safest.
Which one did you wrestle out of a freak's hand?
Both of them.
Both of them. All right.
I was these neckbeard guys were just tackling me, and it was the worst, and they started to tickle me at the end.
Now, in Fargo, the neckbeard is probably for warmth as much as it is an image statement. Would you agree?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's really the scarf.
The scarves and the high collars are going to really irritate your skin.
Yeah, but that's why me and Jesse are partners. See, I wear orange and he's the wrestling beef boy.
Wow.
That's my.
That sounded like something that happens on a Friday night podcast. For extra. Yeah,
I was going to say that's my dancer name. Podcast.
Wrestling beef boy. All right, let's move away from these dank, bitter, horrific. Not horrific.
Oh, wow.
No, I like the Mars one. I would drink that. I would sit and drink that. But you brought another style that people will hear if they're out in the beer world, a triple.
Yes.
Now,
this one's got a cork. I mean, we're going.
That's
classy.
Fancy.
That's only the best for you, Brian.
No, it is fancy. I enjoy seeing that. What is a triple, gentlemen?
So triple is a Belgian style. It's classic, and you know, the Abbey and the Trappist breweries out there make it, but the secular brewers also make it. Double, triple, and quadruple are the three most popular styles. You'll see singles, like labeled as table beers, but double, triple, and quadruple are the Belgian styles. Double is kind of a dark, figgy, semi-strong beer. Triple is kind of a light, effervescent, slightly more alcoholic beer, and quads is kind of anything goes. It can be light, it can be dark, but it is boozy as all get out.
Triple's a little bit more floral, still has some fruit notes, but yeah, a lighter malt bill, and actually a lot more dry than we had the double a couple months ago.
Yes.
Which is one of my favorite styles, but triple, in the beginning, I was not a big fan of it. They are a little bit higher in ABV, but now, I think it was just the ones that I was having were a little bit too boozy, and not, I really like that balance of the fruitiness.
Yeah, and to get this higher in alcohol, they'll actually add like rock sugar and candy sugar to it, and it's counterintuitive because that makes the beer drier at the end. It gives the yeast more food to, you know, ferment and create more alcohol, but they don't, you know, it's no sugar left behind. You got a nice dry, crisp kind of character at the end.
So what are you using as the baseline for your taste test?
This is La Trappe Trappist Triple. This is one of the few breweries in the world that can call itself a Trappist brewery, truly.
And how can, why is that?
Well, it's an
just
order
monks?
Of Trappist monks.
I know.
It's
a Trappist monks.
Oh, man. That's
the
one
I
know.
See? For five. Well, you know what? For participating, you get to try some of the
beer. Oh, it's my favorite.
Well,
this is my favorite kind of
beer. We can ask you, how many actual Trappist breweries are there in the world?
My understanding is it's like less than five.
It's more than five.
Your understanding is
then we've gone way beyond my knowledge.
Is it nine?
No, it's 12 or something. I mean, because there's a few in France, a couple in the Netherlands, and
one in the United States.
There is one in the United States, and there's another one going for Trappist designation in the United States. One's in Tennessee, and one's in Texas.
No, there's one on the East Coast. It's
I didn't know. The East Coast, I knew that.
Yeah.
A Trappist monastery making beer.
But, you're not completely wrong.
Yeah.
There is not very many at all.
A small number. Right?
Yeah. And if you think about it, even if there was, let's say, 20, there's not 20, but...
Woo-hoo!
Oh, nice, John.
Wow.
Blew my ear hole.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That's my
dramatic effect.
My one
Pop
Foley
that baby
trick.
Up.
But, I mean, imagine if there was, let's say, like 20 Trappist breweries. There's more than, there's almost what? 200 breweries?
200,000 breweries. That's a lot of breweries.
In Chicago.
Breweries.
Yeah. Right.
Just within three blocks of this studio, there's 58 breweries.
I think they opened a brewery in the green room since we came in.
Probably. There's enough room. We do a small one, a couple barrels, like a barrel series. We just do a few barrels.
Thank you.
They're not that kidding. Have you been in the green room recently? It's spooky.
I haven't gone in. I'm a scared.
Yeah, no.
Spooktacular.
Yeah. No one
after,
told me.
Maybe after I drink a few more of these, I'll wander into the green room. I'll have beer muscles. I'll wander in. I won't care. So, all right. Now, we look at just looking at this, because I know Cody likes when we all look at the beer. It's not nearly as dank. It's
this is so far from dank.
Yes, this is a clear And I see the effervescence when you poured it. It's very boobly.
It's nice and fruity on the nose.
Almost oh, my gosh. Floral. That smells just amazing. I mean, there's more going in. You know, there's more going into that nose than just the hops.
Like it's fresh banana bread.
Yeah, it's the yeast.
The yeast. And, you know, we had mentioned this on a previous show. With Belgian beers, they're yeast-driven. That's what we're getting most, if not all, the flavor from. We're like American beers, you know, the hazies, it's all hop-driven.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I love about Belgian beers. They're they're very simple, but they're so damn good.
Decadent. I
Yeast-driven. I mean, the yeast are throwing off all these different kind of banana, clove flavors you're getting. By the way, I was right. I looked it up on my phone. There are 12 Trappist monasteries currently producing beer.
Very nice.
But there are, you'll see a lot of fake ones, you know, like someplace will just be like Saint.
These guys in brown robes with shaved heads.
No, really, it would be like Saint, what's-his-face's Abbey Ale, and like there's no, you can't use Trappist in a trademark, but you can pretend to be a religious order and just make a beer.
Saint Michael wrong. Jordan.
That seems wrong. You could just pretend to be a religious order.
That's why. Well, that's why you look for Trappist, because you can't get that one all fake. But like Leffa is a very, you know, there's stained glass on the... And that's a fine beer, but it's you see it everywhere, and it's got stained glass, and you know
you
the old
think
letters.
A monk made it.
Yeah, and it's an Abbey beer, in that it's. I'm not sure if this is still true, but it was originally like the brewery paid a fee to the Abbey to brew it and use the imagery on it. And there's like that. There's a ton more Abbey beers than there are Trappist beers.
I'm going to throw out a stupid question. So Cody, if you're keeping track, put this in the stupid question category. Why a cork? Is it just a marketing thing? Is there something with the effervescence that we need a cork in that one as opposed to a cap on another?
I mean, this is brewed in the Netherlands. This is just a really French influence presentation.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
There's no reason you really need a cork, you know.
But
against,
why not?
Yeah, I'll be really like into it when the first Trappist brewery switches over to cans.
Oh man, that'd be hilarious. Yeah. I'm picturing a bunch of monks on a canning line, like
just with the goggles, putting the glove on it, like Laverne and Shirley.
Yeah,
I think it'd be dangerous because the sash that ties the big, you know, that get caught in the canning line, rip a monk in half.
I think OSHA will, that can slide by. We'll be like, right, well, if you get hurt, it's on you, but we don't think you should be doing this.
Half Monk would be a great name for an Abbey style ale.
Monkish. Yeah, but think of, there's monkish. Well, there's Monkish Brewing in California.
I like this.
This is fantastic.
And I like this.
Completely different composition than the last three. I mean, like you said, this is all about the yeast.
Right, this is a whole new category.
And it's very. I like the. It's bubbly. It's light.
These are great dinner beers too. I mean,
because it cleanses the palate. Nothing coats. Going back to what Jeff said earlier, you don't feel like there's anything left on your tongue or the roof of your mouth. That just
it's the cheat code of really beer pairing. To Jesse's point, if you can't find a Belgian, you could throw almost any Belgian beer at any dish and find some cool resonances.
Really? There's so many. I mean, you can eat something really rich with this because of how effervescent this is, and it cuts through
clean
the
off
richness.
Your palate. Yeah.
You could have it for dessert because it's sweet enough where it complements anything sweet in your dessert. And what else? I mean,
It's got those banana, the clove,
What if Cody ran into the newsroom and got a handful of red vines and a leftover cookie from Dave Marzullo's birthday? Would it compliment
Happy birthday,
that?
Dave. you had me at cookies. Yeah, let's do it.
I don't know if there
are
any.
Are there cookies in there?
There were a couple. They may be gone.
Don't make me leave.
So we're talking how light this is, how effervescent.
Right.
If you guys had to guess what the ABV on this was, what would you throw out there?
Six tops?
5.8.
I'd take the over on six, so I'd take 8.
It is 8. This is exactly as boozy as the last three beers we had, I mean, more or less. And it's just a completely different presentation.
I wish I had dryness,
That's why I know you knew.
Surprise.
I didn't let you answer.
Well, I was looking like I went low because I knew you had teased earlier when you were describing triples that their alcohol was higher. Jeff was
good.
Right on the mark.
That's context clues.
Yeah, I was
You'll do all right on your ACT, young man.
maybe. Oh, man, that'll be good.
When you go back to beer school at Southern.
Would be nice.
This is a dangerous beer if it's 8.
Yeah.
I mean, it's too smooth.
When you get into those quads and you get some of those like 10% and they taste just like, I don't know, a cloud of wonderful. And you're just like,
that's usually
I have
the good
one
thing.
More and then I'll fall asleep on the L and end up at the Kimball stack.
Usually the nice thing about high alcohol beer is you can taste, you know it. You're like, if I'm drinking a barrel aged stout or something, you can tell this is going to be a high alcohol beer. This is very tricky.
Yeah, that's, very the sneaky. Belgians are really good at creating these interesting yeast and flavor characteristics, much like, you know, their winemakers in, you know, the French speaking regions are like really good at creating a nuanced thing that's still, you know, 18% because
it's
wine.
Do the monks do that so they can prank other monks? So that they'll think, hell, go ahead, no, have another one, brother.
It might make the kneeling easier.
Could be.
And the various denial of other things you can't have.
I don't know. You drink enough of these, you're going to want to get rid of one of those vows.
Yeah, you're not sure. you're not that bothered that you had like a loaf of bread for
the
last three dinners.
Oh, no, not again.
It helps with flogging, too.
Yeah, know. Oh, sure. Just take my studded rosary and beat myself on the back. So this is our baseline. So what... As we try these other triples, what are we going to be compared? What are we looking to compare? What should we be trying to taste? What should be?
So this being the baseline, we want the next beer to taste as close to that.
Yeah, and this is another like.
Wait, you know what? I forgot what that one tastes like.
I got
we need just another little.
Fill up that monk.
Tiny bit. Thank you.
It is a really good beer.
Yeah, I forget.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Jeff, did you forget what that one
tasted like? I did.
Oh, Jeff, come down. We need to make an informed decision. So I'm going to hold this, and then I'll, you know.
At 8%, I'm going to hold off. I want to stay sober for the other one so I know what they actually taste like.
You know, I wasn't a big pale ale. I mean, I know I just praised the big, juicy pale ales we had, but I wasn't a big pale ale guy when I first got into beer. And, you know, I was a Miller Lite drinker most of my life, you know, from 15 on.
And, 15. What'd you wait so long for?
I just remember thinking, like, oh,
he's
maybe
90, the age was 15 then.
I was going to say, okay. Yeah,
like, maybe I'm a light beer drinker, maybe beer and, like, the complex stuff isn't for me. And it was these Belgian beers that were, like, changed my mind completely. Like, no, there is so much cool stuff out there. It's just not what's right in front of me right now.
When I first started having Belgians, I really didn't know how to drink them and how to appreciate them.
He was pouring them in his eyes.
Like a monk.
Putting them over ice. Like mixing them with lemonade.
Wow, that's...
I still do that.
Making a shandy? A Belgian shandy?
No, but I really, you know, I would go to, like, Map Room or any bar that had like a really good import beer list, you have these beers, and you know, unless you have someone that actually cares to explain something to you,
right?
You're just kind of like, that looks cool, I'll take that. And I would drink these Belgians, and I was like, all right, I kind of like them. And once I learned more about them, that's how I, you know, became in love with Belgian doubles. I still to this day,
doubles are so good.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
I could see why you picked this style. That's
But yeah, and Belgian brewers are very much like Americans, and they're less hidebound. They do their own thing. They don't necessarily hew to recipe on everything. Like, it's a very iconoclastic country. I feel like, you know, all of us Americans can really like stand in solidarity with the brewers of Belgium.
Just if people want to go out and buy a Belgian, now both so far, our baseline and this second beer, which you'll describe in a minute, are in bigger bottles, almost a 750 milliliter, like a wine bottle.
Yeah,
is that how most Belgian beers are? Will people, if they go to whatever their local beer place is, can you buy them in 6-packs, 4-packs, or is it all big single bottles like this?
Well, it's true Belgian beers, they're all in bottles. I've never seen any
Belgian beer in a can.
Belgian beers in cans.
Okay.
But if you're getting like an American...
No, it's a whole different country.
Aluminium, that's what they call it.
Aluminium? Aluminium?
But American breweries that do Belgian style beers, you know, like Weiner, and there's a lot of breweries that do Belgian style beers, wild ales, and whatnot.
But yeah, like Allagash is in cans. Some of these, like you can find La Trappe in 4-pack bottles.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Allagash is in bottles. I don't know if they have canned that yet or not. You can find it in less than 750, but like when I first started drinking these, it was mostly like big bottle or bust.
Okay.
Yeah.
And look a brown bottle. Some of the Belgian producers still send it in a green bottle.
Yeah.
And between the time it takes to get over here and the exposure to light through the green bottle, like you're just going to end up with some.
Okay.
Thanks, Heineken.
Yeah, wow.
There's actually a wonderful beer called, it's a Belgian sour called Duchesse Bourgogne, and they sell it in green bottles in the big format, and they sell it in brown bottles in those 12-ounce 4-packs.
Yeah.
And the 12-ounce 4-packs are one of the best sour beers out there, and that green bottle is just...
I don't understand.
It's just like too much light in? Is that the problem?
Green bottles block absolutely none of the light. The only reason they ever started in brewing, to my understanding, is because French winemakers had leftover bottles and you use what you have in brewing.
Sure.
But there's no there's no advantage over a clear bottle, which you also don't want.
So what is our second Belgian double, which is a clearer, a little more golden in color than the last one, almost coppery, I guess?
It's
this
very
is from
clear.
Unané, who the brewery is up in Niles, actually.
Oh. Yeah.
This is another, like, those, we're talking these little cool Chicago breweries getting their due. This is another Unané. One that makes... Yeah, Unané. My French is
Unané.
Well, Unané. Non-existent. Yeah, U-N-E space A-N-N accent E regular E.
Hmm.
But they this is another really great Chicagoland brewery.
Looks baffled.
I'm trying to picture this in my head. It's not working.
No, just pass him the bottle.
It's like Unami Burger.
But this is like one of the... We are so spoiled in the Chicago area where like... We have these breweries that like people haven't been to or haven't had their beer that would be the runaway best brewery in town in so many like major and big cities. And this is another one. They're in a strip mall in Niles, which is not where you think to go for your beer, and they make killer knockout beers all the time.
They started off really small. Now they've grown. They've graduated to that space now in Niles. But I remember, I think they've been around for maybe like 3-4 years. That's when I first started seeing them on the market.
A car ran into their brewery last year or 2 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, they rebuilt. This isn't historical beer.
You didn't get it out of the trunk of the car that hit him? This is fresh?
This is fresh. So, this one's a little bit more bitter than La Trappe.
It's a little bitter, and
it's
has
not
a little...
as sweet.
A little, like a syrupy feel to it. A syrupy malt feel to it, yeah.
I get a little more like fruit kind of flavor, but I don't get those aromatic fruit like aromas and flavors kind of midway through like you do with that Belgian yeast.
It almost has like a cider esque essence. There's like an apple, like a baked apple flavor in there that I'm catching, and it's much sweeter. And as opposed to the other Trappist where it was more bready and
it was very bready. That's from the malt bill, and that's what I really like about this. That sweetness is different than Unané's.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there are people this beer is for, and I feel like I'm not that person.
Not that person?
Yeah, yeah. I was more into the yeasty, bready kind of thing, I guess.
Because we like sandwiches.
Love sandwiches.
Good sandwiches.
Sandwiches are good.
Next time I'll get sandwiches.
Welcome back to Sandwich Cast.
We used the word coppery a minute ago. I would almost use coppery to describe like the aftertaste. There's something... I have no idea how to describe this, so words are not going to do me a service right now.
I'm sure they used a Belgian-derived yeast for this, and the things that you get from these, the breadiness, the fruity, you know, the esters and the phenols, you know, the things that throw off spice flavors, fruit flavors, manifest differently in every beer, like, depending not only on the yeast strain, but, like, how it's brewed, how hot it's brewed, how long it's stored, and it's... You know, it's really hard to clone something like La Trappe, which I'm not saying they were going for.
No,
but like,
right.
This just shows where, you know, you're really making the same beer in the same format, and it can go, like, two very different ways.
Right. Yeah, they are very different. I'm going to err toward the first one. If those were the only two beers, and you said, do you want this one or this one, I would go with the first one.
Yeah, I love our friends from Niles, but, man, La Trappe is just an all-timer. It's like, you know, you can be really good at baseball, but, you know, you might not be
Mickey
the babe.
Mano, right.
I like La Trappe. Unané, I like it because it is a triple. I think it's very true to style, though. We have to give it that.
Absolutely.
It's very true to style, but our personal preference, I think, is leaning.
Yeah, I mean, that it doesn't make it a beer that is not worth your drinking.
It's a good beer.
It's just not a beer that... You know,
I really meant it when I said that I do feel like there are people that would love this.
People who love it.
There's something distinct about it, and I feel like I've had sips of drinks of friends who they'll say, oh, I love this, give it a shot, and I'm not a big fan, and this reminds me of
I'm not a big fan of you sipping other people's drinks.
Well,
but that's
know?
Just me.
At least he's not putting his fingers on them.
Yeah, get a flight.
Only lovely ladies that I would share my cooties with otherwise. That's my rule. If they're attractive enough to, you know, whatever, then they're attractive enough to share drinks with.
Welcome back to Cootie Cat.
Yeah. And then they pull their lip back and there's a big shanker.
A knife?
That's from the cootie couch.
Nope, that's from the cootie couch. All right, so we've had La Trappe, which is our baseline Belgian triple. We've tried Unané, which is from right here in Niles. Quality beer, not our preference based on the baseline. At least mine and Cody's and Jeff's.
They and I'll just say this one last thing about Unané. They have an amazing lineup of beers. I've never had one bad beer from Unané.
Yeah, and they don't
it's just definitely good Belgians.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's a good beer.
This is the problem. You try stuff and you go, this is good, but I like this one better. Just, yeah. You know.
Yeah, we are spoiled here on this podcast.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's not like we're bringing in, here's water, and then here's beer. Which one do you like better? Oh, the water just
this water's so good.
Oh, well, by way of natural segue, we are definitely not giving you water next. This is this is the fun, cool thing we've been so excited to share with you since we started doing this show.
All right.
We're going back and forth on text like little kids. Just like,
so now, excited.
Wait, is this, I see Jesse pulling like police caution tape off of one of John's. One of our favorite things, maybe it was two times ago or last, John has a stainless steel growler, which keeps things unbelievably cold and pressurized, so everything was great.
The cool screw top on it, that's fancy. Yeah.
It's really nice. It's a
hydro flask.
John from Revolution Brewing and Jesse Valenciana from Goose Island. You can follow them. UT Chicago is John on Twitter and Instagram, and Jesse ManBQ. The B is just the letter, but the Q is Q U E. All right. So, is it what's in the growler, or is it what's in the bottle that is
in the bottle?
What's in the bottle?
We love bringing the classic German to you because you don't get more like textbook than this. So we've got Scherlenka Schmokbier.
Schmokbier. Oh,
it's Rauschbier. It uses smoked malt.
Oh, have you really?
Going to be cool, and I am so excited to watch you and Cody try this.
All right. So, what is it? Tell us a little about it.
So, before modern malting techniques, malt had to be dried over live fire. Live fire creates smoke. So, you pick up these really smoky notes in the malt that eventually goes in, into your beer. It went out of style with the drum roaster and all the other things where you can just use pale malt or specialty malts. But, our friends in Germany still make some good smoky boys. And, it's cool. It's a fun trip, and it's not like anything else you'll have.
I've had one smoked beer down from Big Muddy.
Down there the other weekend.
They do one for 17th Street Barbecue, and it's they use smoked malts in it.
Yeah, so this is the OG. This is Scherlenka Rauschbier.
Rauschbier. Yeah! You've been drinking, you will enjoy it! You've been smoked some malts.
I'll wait for Brian so we can both drink it at the same time so you can see our reactions that you've been
I'm going to cleanse my palate. Or do you say palate?
You brought water, I brought Mountain Dew to cleanse my palate.
That's probably a mistake.
Right hard.
Well, I'm going to say, first of all, I look at the color of this and I'm like, ooh, this is right up my alley. It looks delicious.
What is this smell?
It's the smoked malt in there.
I haven't tried it yet, but wow.
It smells like smoked Gouda, doesn't it?
It smells like no beer I've ever smelled.
Yeah.
I mean, like, legit.
What was the scotch, barrel-aged scotch that Goose did with...
The Cooper Project beer?
Yeah.
With
Ardbeg?
Yeah, it wasn't Cooper. It was... Man, I should know this because I work for the brewery and I also dislike that beer so much.
It was the Ardbeg, the aged like Scotch, whatever it was, and it was like this, but it was on to 10, like up to 11 even.
I mean, it was it's so peaty. It was a Bourbon County Stout base beer of Bourbon County Stout that we aged in Scotch barrels, and it's what's the name of it? They're going to make fun of me because I should know this.
Feel bad for bringing it up.
I'm on the spot.
What are you trying to do?
If you come up with it.
Do we need to look it up?
How dare you ask him a question about his own company?
I can edit out the 30 seconds it takes you to come up with it.
We'll talk about the Rauschbier.
Isla.
And it's stinky. It's too peaty. I don't like scotch, first of all.
Right.
And that beer presented the flavors of scotch that I dislike so much. I had it the first time, and I'm like, okay, I hate it. And then we would do these tours, and I'm showing people around. They're like, oh, my gosh, I love scotch. I'm going to love this beer. I'm like, all right. And they loved it. I'm still like, maybe it's me. Maybe I had a stroke or something.
No.
Then I taste it. I'm like, no, I still hate this.
Some people just don't like it. It's like a smokehouse burned down.
That's how good this guy is with customer service, though. His first thing isn't, oh, I just don't have the same taste. His thing is like, well, the customers are right. Maybe I had a stroke.
Yeah, maybe I had a stroke. It's got to be brain damage.
What I love about this beer,
this is phenomenal.
Schenker Law, if you go on their website, it's pretty cool. It's like super outdated, and it's got all the pictures of how they make, how they kiln their malts and everything. It's not even like translated. But all their other beers that they make, even the ones that aren't using smoked malts, right, taste smoky because all the equipment
is smoked.
Has that flavor.
Oh, man.
It's amazing.
So what is this? What's the ABV on this?
That's a real good question. Can you read German?
Nine.
No, it's 5.1. It's basically 5.1. Like a classic German lager. It's just very smoky. Jesse, by the way, classy enough to pronounce it correctly and not point out that I didn't. But in my defense, look at this old English writing on this label. That could mean anything.
That's hard. It's a Märzen, which is what we spoke about last time. Märzens are the big Oktoberfest style, you know. So this is a Märzen with, but
smoked,
they use smoked malt. I like it because I like smoke.
It almost smells better than it tastes. Like, and the smell is great. It's very unique. I mean, I like the taste too, but
I don't think that's a bad thing to say. I mean, I've always thought that about coffee, and I love coffee.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Wow, I love both.
Give us the name of this again.
Schlenkerla.
It's hard for me to describe the flavor, though.
Like, Rausch beer.
I can describe the smell as smoky. I get the scotch notes as well, although I usually, if someone pulls out a bottle of scotch and opens it up, and it smells like bad cigars to me. Like, yeah. I hate the smell.
Yeah.
The smell is delicious, but I can't put my finger on the taste. It's not a super bold taste.
No, it's bacon.
It's not the traditional malty flavor. It's not like thick, chocolatey, caramely anything.
It's pretty malty, but with that smoke gets in there, you forget all about it.
Yeah, the smoke is what throws it off of the traditional malty flavor.
Applewood smoked bacon, that's what I always really... It's got that like caramel, you know, you get that roasting caramel sensation. Yeah. And then the meatiness, which is like the malt punches through it.
Yeah.
It's a warm campfire hug for your tummy.
Wow.
Oh, I like that.
It's a bit hammy.
That's a nice market.
I think of smoked Gouda and
there
ham.
That's glazed or unglazed?
It's not sweet enough to be glazed. Yeah. Smoked ham.
What's in the black growler?
So, you think, hey, very traditional, old school German style. Might be hard for John and Jesse to think of an American craft version of it. And you would not be incorrect because there are not very many. But
it was such a pain in the rear trying to find American or local
something to
Rausch beers.
Well, even American craft Rausch beers, not a ton of them. Jesse and I went to three or four different liquor stores.
Wow.
Luckily.
I appreciate, first of all, the effort that you make to put into this program.
Thank you.
Very nice.
But our friends at Dovetail, who we have waxed
poetic about them many times.
They make a Rausch that... We're going to try right now. We're going to see how it stacks up to the OG.
Yeah.
All right. So let's go back while you guys are pouring that. The triples, we went with the baseline, which was once again the...
La Trappist Triple.
So the La Trappist Triple. That's... Give me another couple beers. That's never coming out of my mouth correctly. So that one for our... That was our favorite of the triples.
It was our thumbs up.
Yes, and the Mars was our thumbs up of the first style, the Dank or New England IPAs.
Over Drecker.
Yeah, I don't want to get in, you know, because we had some difficulties once we hit into the hazies.
Yeah.
But that Mars beer is phenomenal.
The Mars beer
was really good. Gold star.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to give another plug to the Map Rooms and the, oh my goodness, I'm having a... Up north, Hopleaf. Wow.
Oh, Hopleaf, mine it.
Oh, yeah, that's in your neighborhood.
Oh, nice. We're kind of neighbors.
Oh, yeah, nice.
For
maybe
triples
carpool.
And these Rausch beers, those are the best places. The Schlenkerla at Map Room, they have like four different...
Oh, really?
Schlenkerla beers. And again, it could say like, this is a Mars and this is this. They all taste smoky.
Yeah.
So it's like... It's like getting through that smoke to get the real flavor of that style of beer, and it's a challenge, but it's fun.
I don't have any friends that are really really huge into beer, but I feel like for many, many years, the Map Room was like the coolest place to go in the universe. Is it still like the hottest spot in that area?
So when I don't people think it's come the hottest in... spot, but the great thing about both of those places is very knowledgeable staff.
Yeah.
And they'll let you try whatever beer they have on draft. Bottles, obviously, you'll have to buy, but they're so friendly. And on Sunday and Monday, Drew and Corey, that are the bartenders there, they like if anything new comes in, they're like, hey, you like? They get to know what your style is, what you like to drink. Then they're like, hey, try this, try that. And they're so knowledgeable. Again, that's how you get to know more about beer.
And where is the Map Room for those
who don't know? Map Room is in Bucktown on Armitage, a couple blocks
west of Damon.
Okay.
It's like the OG. Like,
yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, even as a kid, you know, when I was first drinking beer at
12.
It was, that was
See, that's when most people start, John. We don't wait till 15.
Easy, Drew Barrymore.
Sorry.
But once you got into it, I mean, that was a place where you're like, once you realized there was more to the world than Coors Light and Miller Light, it was like, oh, you know, you really want to try some good beer? Go to the Map Room.
They got Natural Light.
And no, now there kidding. Are, yeah, right, Natty.
Bush Light.
Pour some out for Bush Light. Red Dog, even. And that was always it. You're like, oh, Map Room's the place to go. And now, obviously, there are you know, countless good tap rooms.
Sure.
And places like Hopleaf, places that just didn't exist when Map Room was around. And you're like, okay, now, but that, if you
still
really want to go.
Still going strong.
Yeah, if you want to go and feel like, you know, cool and go to the OG, got to check out the Map Room.
Now, is it a straight up tap room, or is there, do they have a menu? If people
No. They have the tamale guy, and that was the first place I ever ran into the tamale guy, and it's when I realized that the city was not a cold, uncaring place, but rather
a loving place,
a picture book of wonders to be found.
A warm, steamy cacophony of mace.
Nothing better than a tamale. I was at Five Rabbits a couple weeks ago, and they had tamales. Great beer. And they had lovely tamales as we segue to tamales. So, Dovetail
Rausch beer. Smoked malt. Same kind of color profile, a little more
not quite as dark as
a little conservative on the nose as well.
Well, we also just had the
not as assertive, I guess.
Yeah, this is much colder too.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is like the Rausch beer with like training wheels version of Rausch beer. I feel.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the first Rausch beer that a lot of people who visit their tap room will have, just because.
Right.
Sure. Mm.
Yeah, I could see where the smokiness would just blow you away. This is a nice, smooth one, and I kind of wonder what would have happened if I would have served this one first, but I didn't have any way to test the relative smokiness of both.
Ah, no, the other one, the first Rausch, the German one, was much smokier. This is a little easier drinking.
Sessionable, I believe is the key word these days.
Yes, goes down easier. It's still, you still get the smoky flavor. Mm-hmm. It's just not as much. Now,
I can imagine.
I liked the other one a lot, but I like smoky and malty and you know.
Like, I can imagine a half liter of this, and I'm not sure if I could do a half liter of the Schlenker.
Yeah. No, right. that's like Anna Nicole Smith crazy, and this is like nice and easier. You want to spend more time with this?
Oh, Drew Barrymore, Smith.
Daddy, what are these references the man is saying?
Wow. You went back for that one.
Pour some out for Anna Nicole Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what did Clark Gable like to drink, Jesse?
Oh.
Well, scotch.
Gosh, right?
That's what an
energy rubbed. See? Very nice. So, Dovetail, tell us again where Dovetail is.
Dovetail, Irving Park and Belle Plaine. Fantastic place.
Great area up there.
Yeah, it's on Malt Row there, as the local business association has termed it, with Beguile, another great brewery just down the block.
Yeah, Beguile is great.
They're blonde.
Could not be
one
more
of my favorites.
Really?
Exactly. People talk about too many breweries opening up, but I point at Dovetail and Beguile, two awesome breweries doing their own thing, could not be more different, compliment each other.
In harmony.
Like, encourage each other. You know, encourage their fans to try each other and do cool stuff like that. There's Empirical a little up the road, Band of Bohemia, the brew pub with the Michelin star in between, Urban Renewal Brewery in the old space next to Koval.
Yes.
There's just a crap ton of beer near where I live, and, you know,
there's a lot of
charm life. You go try them out, see what's happening, and then go back to Revolution, see what's happening with you guys.
Yeah, it's a fun life.
They're doing some kind of hero.
We have a lot of
some
heroes.
Sort of hero.
Chicago's a city of heroes, Jesse.
Some sort of hero.
Most of the heroes are in Revolution.
Normally, we don't see shade thrown during at the breweries, but we just saw a little shade.
You're taking it up a notch.
Shade thrown is like the subtitle of this segment.
I love when the shade gets thrown.
I have a question about late and dark beers. Am I approaching this the wrong way? Yes. Usually, you either feel like you're in the mood for a light beer, or if I want a bold, specific, stronger, punchy kind of flavor, then I'll go for the dark beer. And like with this most recent dark beer, I feel like it's more of a neutral flavor. Like, I might as well just order a light beer. It doesn't taste, doesn't feel like a strong, powerful, bold, dark beer to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's fair.
A lot of that has to do with alcohol level too, in that the thicker, bolder beers tend to have higher malt bills, which means they have just higher ABV. You know, in terms of like, so I was a big, and still I'm like a big Guinness drinker. It's one of my favorite beers.
Me too.
And people are always like, I don't know how you could drink that. And I'm like, okay, well, if you drink one of, you know, one
it's
of these
for breakfast. Yeah, one of these, it's a sandwich.
One of these light fruit juicy hazies that we had, you know, with the thick palate feel. Like have a little glass of that and then have a glass of Guinness and tell me what you think is like a lighter, more drinkable kind of session beer.
Well, they get scared of the color.
Yeah, and it's really just all about the malt bill, but you can, you know, brewing today is so much that, like, you can create a dark beer with not a ton of body in it.
Oh, yeah.
And by the same token, you know, you can dry hop the holy heck out of something and then make a very thick on the palate beer that is, you know, still very light colored.
Well, there's a lot of brown ales, to your point, John, that are very light and going back to Jeff's buzzword, sessionable, where you're like, well, this looks dark, but you're like 4 or 5% ABV. Mm-hmm. It's... You know, it looks heavier.
And part of it is just like how as humans we're trained to kind of taste and use visual cues and rely on all our senses when we're tasting. It's, you know, you come to expect something dark to be bold. Right. You come to expect something light to be, you know, crisp and effervescent. I mean, like I was saying, that La Trappe, none of you guys thought it was 8%.
No.
I did, though, for the record.
You set the high side. I went high and said eight.
I mean,
you were the contestants row person who guessed $1,001 on the treadmill.
I could have said nine.
You could have said nine.
$1, Bob.
You said eight. You were right on the money. Don't take this
away from me.
You won both showcases.
That's true.
So we give it to you. You got both of them.
That's true.
I guess that's where I will say that
to prove your point, all you need to think of is if you ever order a Black and Tan, or a half and half. Mm-hmm. You would think, if you don't know, oh, the Guinness has to be on the bottom and the Harp's got to be on top because it's like, you're wrong because the Guinness floats on top.
Yeah. I will say, like, as someone who listens to people taste beer and stuff, I hear a lot of people describe lighter, high alcohol beers as dangerous. And I'm not sure I've heard that as much about, like, you know, like an 8 or 9% porter stout. Like, that doesn't usually sneak up on you as much.
Because you're expecting that.
Yeah, because it's the way you taste, the way you see, like, just kind of your own experience feeding back in on you.
Right.
Well, and like, you know, one of my favorite beers is Schwartz beer. And, you know, the malt bill calls for, you know, chocolate malts, you know, black malt. And you look at it, and you can't get any more bold than that.
Right.
But you taste it, it's a lager. It's nice
it's
and
like
light.
4.5%.
Yeah. It's an easy drinking great beer, but people look at it. One of the things that drives me nuts is, you know, somebody at the tap room or like, you know, at a bar and they order a beer and they go, oh, I don't like dark beer. Why don't you like dark beer? I don't want something so heavy.
Yeah.
Then they'll order like this milkshake IPA and you're like, got it.
Okay,
genius over here.
Enjoy it.
Cool.
Well, my wife for a long time would not, oh, dark, I don't like. And then she tried a few. And so now she's gotten to the point where it's case by case. You know, she knows she doesn't like stouts. She's tried enough of them to go, that's not my style. But every once in a while, something will surprise her. She's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Wow, I like that one. So you got to try them. And I think that's what we're doing here is giving people an opportunity to learn that there's things out there that you may have tried a lot and you know about it, or you may not. And so, you know.
Yeah, with explaining styles, people get to hear something that they like. So if we say, you know, La Trappe is clovey. It's got a little bit of banana. It's a little bit sweet.
Right.
It's dry. By describing these beers, you know, there's so many descriptors out there, right?
Yes.
We're hoping to, A, build people's beer vocabulary, but B, trying to maybe hit somebody right where they need to be hit. You know, it's like, hey, I like dry beer, or I like this, or I like that. Right. And then that's when I talk to people, when that person says I like dark beers, I don't get confrontational. I just ask what they like about dark beers. And you get to figure out exactly what you can recommend, you know?
Well, and as you talked about the Map Room and Hop Leaf and these other places, that's if you're interested in trying different beers, those are the kind of places to go. And most breweries, the people who work there are very knowledgeable and open to explain, hey, all right, if you're there for the first time, and like you just said, Jesse, what do you like? What do you usually drink? Okay, well, maybe, you know, try this or try this. You know, it's like food or like wine or like anything else. There's a lot of options. So, but we also get intimidated. You know, we hear double, we hear Rausch beer, we hear terms like that. And you're like, oh, I don't want to look stupid, so I might not ask. But that's what you guys are there for. That's what the people in these tap rooms or at Map Room or Hop Leaf or your favorite liquor store. they'll tell you.
Yeah.
You
know? Anyone who's a snob or makes you feel less for asking a question, they're a terrible beer employee. Yes. And someone better.
I said I was sorry,
they're
John.
They're a useless human being.
Oh. No, they should
take it easy on me.
I don't look at anybody in here except for my lazy eye at Cody. But no, that's, you know. You look like you've had a couple of the
couple beers,
the triples. Yeah,
like I sure have. Beers.
Cody, you should crack open one of those paper umbrellas, Goose Island.
Oh,
you're talking about the name of the beer, but you're pointing to cans, and he was just like paper umbrella.
Cody's cut off.
Wait, are we splitting one of the? You want to give me cups?
We got cups.
Me to pound this.
We'll help you pound
Chuck,
that.
Chuck.
So what?
Pint.
Now, so. What we love about this segment and having you guys in is you talk about other people's beers, but you also brought in some of your own. So what did you bring, John? What did you bring from Revolution?
So we've got our newest of the Hero series. Thank you, Jesse.
Jesse's got a problem with
Citra Hero. It's a showcase for the Citra hop. All our Hero beers are showcases for like an individual hop.
Yeah.
And this one is just, you know, it's a little citric. It's sweet. It's incredibly easy drinking.
It's really good.
But the one that I brought that I'm super excited about, only around for a limited time,
woo-hoo,
in the brown cans over here, Coffee Eugene.
Yes.
So that's our Eugene Porter made with cold extracted coffee from Dark Matter Coffee, whole bean roast coffee. It is, I mean, even if you think you're done with coffee beers, that is the coffee beer to give you. It is incredible. The Dark Matter Coffee blends with, you know, sort of the dry malty bill of that Eugene Stout, and it is just an incredible beer.
One of the best beers.
I love that beer.
I would say that if I didn't work for them.
No joke. Like, and not just because you're here, but that beer, you're like, holy crap, it's coffee, it's beer, it's coffee, it's beer, I mean, and it hits it down the middle.
I mean, and our brewers were going over to Dark Matter, you know, to do cuppings. I mean, they selected the beans for this coffee individually and the blend individually just to brew and make sure that they, like, got the right coffee for the right beer. A lot of times, you know, your coffee stout's just like, here's a bunch of acrid coffee and some stout, and then we'll see what happens. Not throwing any stones, but, like, this is, like, it impressed me, and I thought I was done with coffee beers.
Get one of those, Cody.
And we also,
and now we're going to get to what Jesse made.
This one?
Cody poured the paper umbrella. What did you?
Well, actually, paper umbrella I really like, but one of our new babies here is the Pilze, which is under the paper umbrella. But I think the four-pack, Cody, under you, is not as cold as the one behind you.
Okay.
But for the record, that Eugene Porter is, I love porters. And
I do too.
That is one, that's like my number one porter.
Really?
Right behind.
So Jesse voted
the one
for
that
it.
We just made.
Jeff voted for it.
Oh yeah,
it's a fantastic beer. What I brought was Paper Umbrella, which is our tropical IPA, but the Pilze, which I'm really excited about. It's a lager that we made with hibiscus and blackberry.
Ooh.
Which no other brewery in Chicago.
I'm sorry, we're laughing. We don't need to. Cody can't even hold a cup. You are. Thank God you're taking public.
To be fair, that was thrown at him.
I thought they would stay together. That turned into a bit of a vaudeville.
Oh, all right, John threw me.
I just heard it.
He threw me a stack of cups, and the cups like separated in midair. So
that's not how it works in the cartoons.
Not at all. So I'm sorry. Hibiscus and blackberries.
Yeah. So there's no other brewery in the city that's ever made a beer with hibiscus, and we decided that we would be the first.
You jerk.
No,
I don't think that's true.
I don't think so either. Which hero had hibiscus in it, John?
It's called Rosa. It's not a hero.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, but we made this really phenomenal beer. It's a lager with hibiscus and blackberry. And both of these beers, I crushed a lot of the paper umbrella over the summer. The Pilze, we actually just received a 4-pack. Every employee at Goose received a 4-pack today.
Oh, wow.
They're like, oh, yeah, by the way, you guys stop by and grab a 4-pack. So,
no, and you brought it here?
I brought it here.
Good man. Humbled.
Well, then we'll have to open one.
The first and only hibiscus
so
beer.
So the paper umbrella is very nice.
It's a
tropical IPA.
Yeah. It's a beautiful beer.
So Jesse let me have some of this when it was in test cans, and I was like, I felt, now I just feel lesser because it's available to the world.
Right, before you were special.
I thought, I would just hoard it and sit on it like smog. And
do you guys ever wonder or look at, and obviously you want people to buy your beer. Mm-hmm. Revolution and Goose are in the business of selling beer. You want people to enjoy it. Do you ever look at some of these people who are hoarding it and go, it's beer. We're going to make more. We're going to make cooler beer or beer that you'll probably like as much. What are you doing?
Beer is so good fresh. Even the barrel aged stuff that Jesse's, that Goose Island, that Revolution puts out. Like, we tell people, drink that beer now if you feel like it. Like, don't feel like you got to wait on it, because it's made to drink
stuff,
today.
The barrel aged stuff, people think, oh, if I store it, it's going to get better.
I mean, and it might,
some of
for
the
some
changes,
people,
you know, like Belgian beers, these can last. If stored properly at the right temperature and everything, the right conditions, they can last for so long. You know, the beers, our Belgian wild ales that we make, or Belgian-inspired wild ales that we make, are, we say they last 5 years on the shelf. But you can have one that's from 2010, and have a new one, like, side by side, and they just change. The complexity changes. But our brewers will tell you, and your brewers will tell people, this beer is made to be drank right away.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny.
You drink it.
I had one of the a dry hop 312 the other day, and right on the can it says drink fresh, and I was like, oh, this been in the refrigerator for a few weeks.
Refrigerator
still fresh.
Refrigerator's good.
Okay,
there was
still fresh.
Some
was
research
good.
From Miller Coors a few years ago, and they tested their beers in a variety of different temperature conditions. So the rule of thumb, and this doesn't apply equally to every beer, but 3 days in like a hot car is equal. Not really. 3 days in a hot car will age a beer as much as 30 days, like, you know, at room temperature on a shelf.
Okay.
Will age beer as much as 300 days in a fridge.
Yeah.
Who's that person who's leaving beer in a hot car for 3 days?
I'm just saying, it happens, you
unless
know?
Like, you're stranded in the desert, or Jesse.
If some, you know, if your corner store doesn't have a lot of refrigerated storage and they're just kind of putting stuff, you know, in the back room.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you accidentally leave something in the car. It's just like, even people who say they have cellars in their basement.
I think beer should be treated like babies. You check the back seat to make sure
the fridge.
You keep them cool. You don't want to leave your baby or your beer in the back seat of the car on a hot day.
Yeah, really. And even when, you know, Revolution beers, Goose Island's beers, they do develop in different and interesting ways.
Shouldn't be in your fridge long.
Through properties we could have a ton of stuff on, but like, if you're going to store in the fridge. Like, that is, no beer will age better at room temperature than it will in the fridge.
Perfect. Yeah.
When you see a lot of it too, I think I might have told this a while back, but I'll retell a story. I was in South Korea for a beer festival. And
you have not told that story, but now it sounds fascinating.
So I was there, and it was interesting because I met some people. They look at me, and they're like, oh, that's an American dude. It's an American-looking dude. Cool. And they're like, hey, like, people, expats come up to you, and they're like, have you tried this? Have you tried that? So they take you, and they're like, do you like IPAs? And I'm like, sure.
Sure, why not?
You know, you're in a different country. Yeah. You don't want to be rude. And it's like, yeah, IPAs. Then they take you, and you try these IPAs, and they just taste like crap. you know, you're like, oh, thanks, man. They're like, no, try this other pale ale. You're like, no, I think I've had enough pale ales. I want to try something else.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, to John's point, these beers get stored in these lockers, and they sit on a dock.
Oh, God.
Because they have to go through customs.
Right.
So up until recently, a lot of these beers that got to these countries were pretty much being smuggled, right? So there's guys that somehow are able to buy beers from wholesalers, then they're kind of like this middleman.
Yeah.
So they export it, and they've got people already lined up, like, willing to buy this beer. People spend big bucks, but they're not stored properly. So you taste them, the hops are gone. The hops drop out.
Are the first thing to die in a beer.
Mm-hmm. So you end up tasting a malty, like a terrible malty beer, and it's not like a good malty beer like we've had. It's just like you taste malts, and you taste none of the hops, and it's gross.
Yeah. So some people think like, oh, well, you say the hops balance the malt, but I really like the malt. I would love to try a beer with the hops kind of dropped off, and it's only the malt. And, man, it is not good. And I say this as a certified malty boy. It's not my thing.
And even Guinness tastes a lot different over here than, like, in Ireland, right? I mean, and that's not like a hoppy beer, right?
No, but there's things that are added to Guinness that, like, it's slightly
pasteurized
different.
To ship, too.
Yeah.
That's another. That's a whole different thing. Like, this is, like, we're talking about, like, beers that have really sensitive, like, time sensitive ingredients.
Got it.
Like,
so
hops.
Back to the original point. These people who are hoarding beers are probably goofy.
Well, they like to trade. It's like a status thing.
But like, let's be honest.
I don't know. Jesse and I are just more into the drink it fresh, share it with your friends. Let's all.
It's beer. Let's have fun with it.
I mean, I have a cellar. John's got a cellar. We've got beers that we've, I guess you could say we've hoarded, but when people come over and I'm having beer, I'm like, go in there and grab whatever you want. And they go, really? Can I take this home? I'm like, you can't take it home. That's the rule.
Yeah, you got to drink it here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I could, you know, like I've got beer that. You've got beer.
Yeah, people are like, oh, I could sell this for a couple $100. I'm like, no, I don't care. Just like enjoy it. What do I care? Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. And it's not about that.
Well, I know that's a big thing in Munster. You know, with the,
famous Munster beer black market.
The Munster beer black market. Everybody, oh boy, I'm going to make a business. Putting my children through college.
It was
a bottle of beer.
It was a huge controversy on Reddit when they closed down the beer trading board because you weren't supposed to have commerce through the different channels. Yeah. And like, you still see stuff on the beer channels like RIP beer trading. But I mean, it's not a bad hobby. I'm just saying, like, if you are getting an entire pallet of some hard to find stuff because you want to squirrel it away and trade it piece by piece for like stuff you can't get from elsewhere. Like, is that all that constructive? Is that helping people enjoy beer? Is that helping people like, you know, support
spreading
beer
the word
and bring their love of stuff to other people? That's all.
Yeah. I was actually today I was talking to a couple of coworkers and somebody had just read the story about these guys coming in from China and buying a bunch of these beers that people wait in lines for to take back to China and sell for like, They make enough money.
It's pronounced China.
China. I love the Chinese people. It's a great country.
This will age well.
Terrific beer.
But they take all this beer and they'll pay like, you know, to fly over here, fly back, and the suitcase fees, the whatever oversize, and they still make a ton of money just bringing dorky beers back to like hard to get beers to China.
Dorky beers.
I mean, but at the same time,
that was
my
radio name when I worked in Milwaukee.
The whole craft beer thing,
Brian Stripper name,
Dorky Beers.
Like if we were back in the '90s, when like maybe a restaurant would have like one or two craft beers on like a 20 beer menu, like now the fact that like they're smuggling craft beer into China, like craft beer isn't like a fad or a trend.
It's everywhere.
And it's not only an American thing; it's everywhere. Everyone likes great beer, and you know they usually like it made pretty locally to them. And because of a lot of the freshness stuff, but also like beer is an identity thing. Yeah. You know, you want to throw in with your hometown.
Let me circle back to the Coffee Eugene.
Oh, yeah.
Thumbs way up.
Oh, dude, this Coffee Eugene.
The Coffee Eugene is
like,
phenomenal.
So you like it.
Get out. No, I am buying so much of this. This is
only for a limited time.
I was going to say, yeah, we just dropped it a couple weeks ago, and like it's still on the shelves, but like this is it for this year. I mean, this is a labor-intensive, process-intensive beer. We put it out once a year, and like when it's gone, it's gone.
I will be getting many of it, and it will be gone faster because of me.
I'd like to be
Jeff
buried.
Jeff agrees, right?
I'd like to be buried in this beer.
It's possible. Fine. Embalm me with it.
No, so we were both over here on the side just looking at each other like, oh, my God.
I told you, this is my favorite.
What's the ABV on this?
Can you check on that can code?
6.8.
6.8. I mean,
that's a good beer.
Hefty.
It's a sessioner beer compared to some of these double pails.
Oh, right.
But it's not
the 8% that I called.
But to your point earlier,
Jeff,
I don't.
We get it. You're the best number caller.
I don't consider it dangerous, quote unquote. Like I'm gonna love one of these. I don't know if I could knock back a whole six pack.
You made it sound creepy.
Challenge
accepted.
You just
made drinking a beer sound really creepy.
I'm gonna
make
love to this coffee beer. Crack it open, poke some holes in that. You know what I'm saying?
How do you open beers?
That went weird.
You don't
want to
know.
It is honestly though, the perfect like.
Deformed.
Brian took it there. I just heightened. I was yes anding. It's a Chicago thing, regional like our beers.
Sure. It's really the perfect like nightcap beer. Like maybe I want another beer, but like at the end of that, you know, I just want one more.
Right.
Relax. Yeah. Like that's my go-to.
All right. Now we talked a little bit about temperature before beer temp. Something like this, and I've talked to Jesse about this in the past with the bourbon barrel stuff. You want I would guess it's the same with the Coffee Eugene and the bourbon. You want it to kind of get almost to room temperature because you mentioned, John, earlier that a lot of the notes come out when a beer gets a little warmer. If you're trying to drink something ice cold, all you're tasting is a cold. Now, some beers do some beers benefit from the colder temperatures and other beers, like a heavier beer or something like this, more complex. Good night, Jeff. Always a pleasure.
Best number guesser over here, right here.
Yeah. Give him another one on the way.
Human hydrometer.
Jeff Carlin, always wonderful. Do some beers benefit from being served colder like say the tropical IPA.
I think
that seems like something I would want to drink colder. The paper umbrella.
Yeah, I think maybe like. You know, if you have like a Miller Lite or
yes, like especially like a cold Coors Banquet is delicious. Yeah, some of these beers that are brewed with adjuncts and stuff like Corner Rice and I'm not knocking it. I'm just saying like those like it's brewed and served to be just enjoyed super cold. It's a very refreshing, very crisp, very neutral kind of thing. And if it's something like a barley wine or you know an English ale or a bourbon barrel stout, like you want a little closer to like 55 degrees.
Okay.
That's why like you know it's not only serving size why those bars will give you snifters of like a 6 or 8 ounce pour.
Right.
You know it's just because your handle warming up a little more and open the beer up and you can sniff on it. And
I like holding on to those little snifters and like it really.
Well, you look fancy.
I want to look fancy, sure. And it's also it serves a purpose too, though. You know,
but yeah, and that's how I talk with my brother Niles before my radio psychiatry show.
Of course, you got to be fancy. You have to swirl it. Now, is there a point where too much swirling makes me look like a jack?
You start spilling it all over yourself and continue swirling.
Cody's like, all right, what time? What was,
yeah.
an hour 20 mark.
Mark that down. What is, I don't know. You've got all the clocks in front of you. It doesn't matter. Don't
I just told you, an hour 20. So let's recap before we start wrapping things up. Let's recap our three styles that we had today. We had the Dank, the North New England IPA.
Hazy right? New England IPA Nipa? Is all the rage Hazy's. In New England and elsewhere.
All the kids are drinking that.
Yeah, I've seen them every time I go to a beer. Have you tried the New England? I'm like,
they are the hot thing.
I like clam chowder and a lobster roll, but I don't know if I'm a fan of the New England
IPAs. These have 0% clam in them.
You know something they didn't mention?
Just like Cody.
There's oyster stouts, clam. Though.
I've tried an oyster stout.
Did
not care for
it. Future podcast here.
All the crazy stuff, crazy ingredients that are put into beers.
Somebody put me on the spot the other day, and they asked what the craziest thing I ever had in a beer. Like, the craziest beer, and I'm like, man, honestly, if you would have asked me like 10 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, I had an oyster stout. And somebody would have said, whoa, really? And now it's like, there's like kids' fingers.
I know.
Wait a minute. Who's
I had a real answer
kids
in here.
Finger stout.
It's just an example, guys. You know,
it's not an example.
A horrible example.
In this certain jungle, there's cannibalism, and they're it's
cannibal brewing.
You
should see their labels. Very artistic, gross, bloody, but artistic.
Jesse and I, with our friend John from the Cicerone program, split a bottle of Black Truffle IPA. Black Truffle Pilsner a couple years ago. It was like a 100 and some a bottle. Oh, I thought it was. I mean, I like truffle, but they use like real shaved black truffle in the mash, and it was a cool beer. I think they still serve it at Moody Tongue down in Pilsen.
Mm-hmm. Really?
That beer was actually first made at the Goose Island Brew Pub.
Yeah,
when
the
Moody
Tongue owner. Yeah, it was a Goose Island alum.
Yeah,
like seemingly everyone in Chicago brewing, you know, of a certain age.
Yeah.
Was it worth it, or was it just a gimmick?
I liked it a lot. Jesse didn't like it as much. Our friend John was kind of in the middle, so opinions vary.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So oysters, black truffles, and children's fingers.
Children's fingers.
Those are the oddest things in beer.
Two of
right
those
now.
Are real.
In that order. First two are the weirdest.
They are.
Yeah, because children's fingers, they haven't been around long. They don't add a lot of flavor. There's just a hint of innocence. You drink it and you go, oh, this makes me nostalgic for my younger days. I want to put this in an outlet. I don't know what's going on. It's very delicious.
If I was like one of those crazy internet billionaires, I'd be like, start my own little brewery. And I'd be like, hey, can I get a reliquary bone of a saint? Like, let's see how that goes, you know?
Wow.
Get that good, like, we'll harvest that good saint yeast.
How great of a Trappist ale would that be if you used actual saint bones in it?
I know. I think that I'd probably have to pay him. I think it'd be like an Abbey bone beer.
I think Elon Musk is out of one job, so he's probably looking to get into something else.
Oh, nice. I consult with him.
This is turning.
Call me Elon.
You know, we need to put this on the business hour at noon, coming up with ideas for new beers.
Yeah. I thought you were going to
say, Bertrand, get at us.
Yeah. He's in England right now. He can't, but I'll talk to him. We'll let him
tell him in 6 hours, get at us. Yeah.
Listen, we got a new thing. This is an incubator. We're coming up with all sorts of ideas. That's what we do. We have a few beers we incubate.
Yes, we have been drinking.
I thought you were going to tell me to get Elon Musk on the show, and I don't know if I can do that.
Why not?
Had any of those beers that are like 30% ABV, like the crazy Scottish
ones. I've had the Sam Adams Utopias, and it's almost like drinking like a spirit. You know, it's very low, super. The higher you get in alcohol, the lower the, you know, the head retention and the carbonation in a beer, yeah. That kind of sticks around. So, you know, at some point, they're good. If you like those kind of sherry-like flavors.
Head retention.
Head retention.
And I, so, you can go back after you say the sherry, you can finish your point.
Okay, so my original point is that these high-alcohol beers are almost like drinking kind of a medium ABV spirit. And, you know, they're kind of enjoyed like that with the resonances you get from, like, a beer. You know, it's beer, but it reminds you of another thing. Anyway, head retention is just the foam you get when you pour. You know, the thing where you used to crack the Busch Light and just put it all the way in the bottom of the cup to not get in college.
Right.
The head is actually vital in, you know, like, delivering a lot of those aromas.
Ah.
So, like, when you get a big inch of head on your dovetail beer.
Cody's talking right to you.
That's like, it makes your beer more flavorful. You want that head. At higher alcohol levels, you are getting a lot of flavor from malt and booze, and it doesn't necessarily need it. But that's why flat beer, you know, in addition to being flat, it's like why it tastes like crap, because all those aroma delivery thing, they're just gone.
I knew a guy back when I was doing stand-up, old Chicago guy, great comic, but every time he ordered a beer, he wanted as much head as possible.
Yeah.
He would have like this much beer and about 4 inches of head. And that was his.
That is a thing.
Four inches of head. But that was his thing. And I was like, dude, you're just drinking foam. What?
That is a thing in the beer. Czech Republic. You can ask for a pour that's like a little inch of beer and five. Because, you know, I mean, like you're just kind of trying to have a little bit of beer or something. Or you're trying to enjoy the aromas and not so much drink. Yeah, you could do it. Like, I know we keep bringing them up, but like Dovetail, like they have a solid inch of foam on all their beers when you go to their tap room.
So for those, and we'll start wrapping up because we have more drinking to do. But if you're, sometimes I'll go out to either a brewery or a tap room, and I get a beer that has a lot of head, and I'm like, well, you're kind of ripping me off. I want more beer and less foam. But if I get about an inch of foam, is that a good pour?
It just depends on the size of the glass. Like those shaker pint, just the regular old pint glasses you see, like you might be getting ripped off. But like the Europeans have a great solution to this in that all their glasses have a little thing on the side. Like this is however many liquid ounces.
I see the line. Yeah.
And like I'm telling you, a good pour like goes right up to that line and then like it goes to the top and then there's like a big rocky head. I mean, and this isn't possible with all beers, but those German lagers all do it awesome.
Well,
you know,
I've
like
seen that
hanging
a lot.
Above the glass.
Yeah.
So delicious.
I see that line a lot on either Imperial Pints at places or during Oktoberfest because they tend to have the bigger, the big steins. And so there's always that line with the numeric notation.
Yeah, where you're not going to find them is those the shaker pints like that.
Yeah, shaker pints aren't good for anything except for stacking, which makes them too convenient for bars. So we're stuck with them forever.
Yeah, they're the worst for beer.
You know what it is? The beer with no foam thing is like ordering your soda with no ice. It's like, yeah, sure, you're getting a little more, but like you're gradually like just detracting from the experience.
But so it's got to be, I mean, like, it's a
warm,
too.
Cody's warm Mountain Dew over here, you know? No ice in it? Or did you get ice, Cody?
No. Oh, well, there was ice. We've been here for a while. We'll see. It's
this
pretty
is
cold.
My favorite part of your guy. I enjoy your entire appearance. My favorite part is when we realize that Cody is really a lightweight.
What are you talking about? You know, I have noticed, I will say, I can literally have like five glasses of whiskey neat or whatever, five or six, and like be fine. But then I have like one or two beers, and it's like, what just happened? And I guess they impact your system differently.
I don't know. Maybe you got a barley condition.
Yeah, maybe you're allergic to malt or hops.
Is that a thing, though? Like,
sure, why not?
Did people get... Like, the beer affects them faster? I don't know
if you know, Jesse and John are not doctors. they're beer experts, but they're not physicians.
I was told this was a physician segment.
Yeah, that was another show. That may be down the hall.
I sold you some bag pills, but we weren't supposed to talk about that.
Right. Yeah, any medication that is distributed or
you
dispersed?
You didn't make money off of
it. No, I was going to take those before my next EDM show, I thought. Right?
Right. Just dip your pacifier in there.
I
and
will.
And you'll be fine.
I will.
Prescription labor laws, Dr. Molly.
Jesse almost spat his drink out. That was great, minus the potential damage to the radio studio. The Allstate Skyline Studio on beautiful Wacker Drive. That's too bad.
Got a lot of history to catch up with. Someone's got to break this studio in.
Exactly. Well, we've been doing our best to do it as often as we're here. All right, so we had let's recap one more time.
Oh, that's how we started this.
Right. We had the Mars. The Mars was the
Mars
New England,
Double IPA. The New Mars, England IPA
that we like the best.
The hazy.
Then we went to the Belgian doubles and our
Triple.
Baseline. Triples. Our baseline was the
La Trappe,
and we like that. We like that, even though we did like the Uniwani.
Go to Niles and ask him how to pronounce it.
Right, go to Niles because they have wonderful beers.
Awesome beer.
We liked the La Trappe, and then we went to the German?
Rauschbier.
And we had a lovely one from Dovetail.
Yes.
But the baseline was the
Schlenkerla
Rauschbier.
Which was a little heavier smoke.
A little more campfire on it. Yeah.
The one from Hammy. Dovetail had a nice balanced smoke, an easy smoke if you're looking for an entree into the Rauschbier.
Mm-hmm.
Dovetail is definitely the way to go. And then we tried Paper Umbrella, which is a tropical IPA from Goose Island. We tried the Coffee Eugene from Revolution. I don't know if Jesse likes this. There was not a hero on that label. Nothing says hero unless we could say Coffee Eugene hero.
Hey, now, Eugene Debs was a hero to the people.
There he goes. So both of those were fantastic.
Dude, this beer is a hero to me right now. It's so good.
I got to give a quick shout out because I mentioned earlier that I tried one of the dry hopped 312s from Goose Island. That was was that the official beer of the marathon?
It was.
It was, because if you finish 26.2, then you got a 312.
I like that, yeah.
And if you finish 25.2, you got a saline bag and an ambulance ride.
Yeah, you get a foil blanket and you get people just shaking their head going, oh, one more mile, you would have had
a loser.
It. Yeah. You were so close. Very pitiful.
He keeps asking for gummy bears.
So you can always, if you missed any of this, well, of course, it'll be it's up on the podcast. That's how you're listening to it.
I'm going to have links, and I'm going to list all these beers in the show notes.
Like, Cody will sober up and link some things.
Eventually. I will post a link to Map Room, and I'll put the address.
Hopleaf
and Map Room and everything.
Everything we've talked about, you can go to the Facebook page. You can go to WGNRadio.com.
You'll see them on WGNRadio.com, not so much the Facebook page.
Whatever. I'll post a link to that.
The ultimate destination is WGNRadio.com.
Sure
it is. That's where everything will be.
Branding. And then you can always follow the guys. You can follow Jesse on Instagram and Twitter at JesseManBQUE. JesseManBQ. And John Carruthers from Revolution is at UT Chicago because he's a volunteer at heart. Whether it comes to beer or being here, he's a true Tennessee volunteer. And, of course, it's GooseIsland.com and RevBrew.com for the big websites of the companies. We will talk to you again in just a couple of weeks, and we will I don't know what you got planned for the next one. It's you did blow our minds with the Rauschbier. It was delicious. It was delicious.
Excellent.
Let me, as we wrap this up, because now all of a sudden, and I just want to see your faces. As people, it's October. People are going into their liquor stores, and they're seeing a myriad of pumpkin beers. I know. And we've done in the past, we've done in our own unscientific pumpkin beer taste tests without calling out any particular. Is pumpkin beer worth it? Your groan earlier made us know your answer, Jesse. But what do you think of pumpkin beers?
The thing is, it's not even, they're not really truly pumpkin beers. They're pumpkin pie spice beers. I was in St. Paul not too long ago, and one of my favorite breweries in not only the Midwest and the country is Barrel Theory.
Oh, we talked to the guy from Barrel.
Yeah,
Theory.
He was in. Yeah, yeah. And they made a beer, kind of poking fun at that. It was a big stout called Extra Basic. XTRA Basic.
Extra Basic.
That's incredible.
And it was essentially just like a play off that. And I thought it was funny. And I had it. I tasted it, and I enjoyed it. You know, and it was
okay.
But I think it was. Again, be in the back of my head, I'm like, they're making fun of this.
Yes, so you drank it ironically.
Yeah.
And then, but
he grew a handlebar mustache mid drink,
twirled it around.
I rode my fixie up here and thought about this.
Did you grow a North Face jacket at the same time?
I own that one, okay, and it's Patagonia.
Oh, my bad, my bad.
Wow,
but no, yeah, it,
step.
It was. I thought it was funny, but like they make such a good beer. Where I'm like, cool. They just added these other like ingredients. That,
right.
You know, if you took away like the story behind it.
Okay.
You know, if you just said, hey, we made this like spiced stout. I was like, that's a good pastry stout.
Cool. Yeah.
But the fact that they're like, this is our pumpkin. I'm like, oh, that's goofy. I'll never order it again. But
right. What about you, John?
So they're not for me, but at the same time, I think about all those like wit beers and stuff I like with coriander and orange peel literally in the brew, and I'm thinking like, you know, if I can accept spice in this one beer, I can accept others' love of spice in this other beer. That said, there's nothing like that really knocks my socks off when October comes, and I'm like, oh, I got to get that.
Okay.
Can I say every year I buy Pumpkin, which you're a fan of, right, Brian?
Yes, I do like Pumpkin.
I've gotten Southern Pumpkin, Tier. And I was told...
Southern Tier makes
Southern
a good
Tier
beer.
Makes very nice
make,
beer.
They make good beer all year.
Now,
you know?
I was told if you keep a bottle of Pumpkin around for a year, it gets, like, really, really good. So I did that,
do you
actually.
Have to say its name in the mirror three times?
You know, I was just going to say, you know, I hate you. I hate you so much.
No, it was the weirdest thing. Like everyone told me this for years and years. In 2013, 2014, I guess, I literally got a bottle of Pumpkin. I had a few. I kept one, and I just stuck it in my cabinet, threw it in the fridge around Halloween time, and then drank it. And I was like, this doesn't taste any different at all to me. Like, is there any
truth? It's all artificial flavor. I mean, like, especially what happens is with the bigger beers like that, when you keep them, when you store them for longer than, if you store them for any period of time, all the flavors kind of, they don't drop out like people say they do, but they fall to the back and they're not as prominent, you know? So it's, you're not getting it the way that beer's supposed to
again,
be.
Again, drink it when it's made.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, he was trying to do the curse.
He was. He was.
Curse of the pumpkin.
I don't know what. He's
going to come and dance around his apartment.
I give you one wish pumpkin. Because you believed.
The pumpkin is here.
Are you thinking of Rumpelstiltskin?
No, we're thinking of Candyman.
Oh, that one. Yeah. I have a friend that's obsessed with pumpkin beer. And it's like every October, he's like, I'm going to go buy 15 different types of pumpkin beer. And
that's his thing.
That's
good
his thing.
On him. Like,
yeah, God bless you.
Well, when I lived with him for a while. And when I worked at Starbucks, when I would bring home the, you know, like the
PSLs?
Price. Actually, it was the pumpkin cream cheese muffins.
Oh.
Because when the, you know, they'd expire, right? Yeah. And they'd throw out a bunch of, like, bakery items at the end of the night every night. And when it was October and they had those pumpkin cream cheese muffins, dude, I could have paid my rent with those. He was so into those. But he's a pumpkin beer guy, so I know that there's people into that.
Well, I just wanted to ask, because it's out there. You can't walk into a Binny's or a liquor store anywhere and not be bombarded with pumpkin beers.
But the only one I've liked is Pumpkin. I don't know about you.
No, I do like Pumpkin. The rest, I can give or take.
I mean,
you know, it's like,
if it gets someone drinking a beer instead of like a White Claw or some wine or a vodka cola, like, I'm into it. Like, anything that brings people to beer, I'm into. I just don't have to drink it myself.
It's one of those where, like, once a season, I'll have one and go, oh, okay, I'm good till next Halloween.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, whereas other types of beers, I want to drink every day, all the time, which is why I'm going into treatment. I'm not actually going to London. I'm going into treatment.
Step four is this now?
Sure, whatever.
I can't wait till I make amends on this show.
I'm going to find
that's the step that's never happening on this show. There will be no amends.
I'm going to find wherever's selling coffee, Eugene, and just buy them out of it. That's my point.
If you're in North Center, I know Bottles and Cans has it. I only plug them because they are delightful people.
They are great people.
I used to live right next to those guys. And that's by Bad Apple. And Bad Apple has a huge beer selection, too.
Bad Apple has a great beer list.
It is. Okay. They do.
Hidden gem.
That was used to be my go-to first date spot, Bad Apple. It's like the North Center version of
I heard that don't spoil
Napper.
The whole bunch.
Well, they sometimes.
Hmm.
Depends. Well. Depends on the season.
Try to throw a little Osmond Brothers in there for you.
We're nothing if not Osmond Brothers specific
on
this show.
We're all about the Osmond Brothers here.
Yeah.
Merrill was my favorite. Merrill, the best Osmond. Underrated. Donnie got all the attention. Merrill was the man. Thank you again, John Carruthers, Jesse Valenciana, as we go on. And thank you, Merrill Osmond, for coming in.
The weirdest note to end.
No, that's how
that
we
show
ended.
Got so weird when they brought Coy and Vance Osmond on for the last season.
Vance Osmond was the Cousin Oliver of the Osmonds. Let's be honest. There's no where they were like, oh man, we got to go to Cousin Vance. He's like third generation. He's not even really related by blood.
And he's from the Duke clan, you know.
And he drinks. He doesn't drink 7-Up.
Yeah,
he'll drink a Coca Cola.
He punched little Donnie.
Of course he did.
Donnie was a little rock and roll. He was a little bluegrass.
Yeah. It's like, Vance, you don't get it at all, do you?
Stop trying to cut people with a bottle.
Someone give me some more beer. I have no idea what's happening anymore.
Vance is moonshining it up. All right. So, again, follow John Carruthers at UT Chicago, Jesse Valenciana at jessemambiq.com. We will talk to you guys very soon. Cody, always a pleasure. Well, nice to have you along as well. That's it for this week. We will talk to you again next week right here. All right. Are we done?
Yeah. Links to everybody on Twitter in the show notes. So just check it out, WGNRadio.com.
There you go.
Yeah.